Welcome to Kentucky Week on the Savage Pads podcast. I'm your host, Doug Battle. And yes, the Dogs took a loss, but the show must go on. And on this week's show, we are joined by former New England Patriots first round pick, Robert Edwards. College football analyst Corey Amick will also join the show to discuss what went wrong on Saturday and what absolutely has to change if Georgia is to right the ship and contend for a college football playoff spot. And in the show's final bit, Caleb Gwynn returns for his weekly Pick Six segment, as well as a look ahead at Georgia's upcoming battle with Kentucky. Now, before we kick off an absolutely loaded show, I want to tell you all about the Georgia Bulldogs, who we partnered with to make this episode happen. Our friends at Tailgate Georgia are your premium suppliers of vintage Georgia Bulldogs and local Athens apparel. As an officially licensed partner of the University of Georgia, Tailgate meshes vintage Georgia Bulldogs graphics with the comfiest tees, sweatshirts, hoodies, and track jackets you'll own to capture the feel of Athens in each piece of clothing. Just take a look at the apparel displayed on their Instagram page. It's at Tailgate Georgia, or on their Facebook. Now, as someone who can personally vouch for the quality as well as the fresh style that Tailgate provides for dog fans, I want to give one lucky winner a $75 gift card to use at Tailgate Georgia. Here's what you need to do to enter the giveaway. Simply follow us at Savage Pads on Twitter and retweet our pinned Tailgate tweet for your chance to win. Then on Monday, October 21st, we will randomly select and announce the lucky winner, who will receive $75 of store credit to spend at Tailgate, which is located downtown Athens between Jittery Joe's and Starbucks. This storefront has recently hosted meet and greets for UGA legends, including Robert Edwards. And that brings me to our upcoming interview with none other than Robert Edwards. We're talking his historic performance against South Carolina in 95, his experience playing alongside Kirby Smart, and how Running Back U has allowed him to impact the lives and careers of Georgia running backs such as Todd Gurley, Nick Chubb, and most recently, Zeus. We've got a great show coming up. Stay tuned.
Practice every day.
Man, oh man. Mono ain't mono.
He definitely 6 hour mods, me and myself. As close as we have right now to rope on.
When we scored, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, you know, just like with Fran talking to him.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job of bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC championship, we look like a completely different team, and we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner. And
as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust of Eric Murray as my quarterback.
The kid was just special.
I was famous. He was onside.
Everybody respects the specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best two teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back you.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
Welcome to the Savage Pads podcast. We've got running back U alum and former New England Patriots first round pick, Robert Edwards, on the line. Robert, thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, Robert, as you know, the Dogs took a tough L at home to South Carolina this last weekend, but I want to take our listeners back to 1995 when a young defensive back made his debut at running back against the Gamecocks and set a UGA record while doing so. Robert, before we get into that game, can you tell our listeners how you made the decision to switch from running back ahead of that 1995 season?
Well, really, it wasn't my decision. It was a decision of Coach Goff and his staff to make the change. They decided that Hines Ward wasn't going to quite make it at the running back position, and they wanted to move him back to receiver, so they asked me to try the position. And that spring before that season, we experimented with me at running back, and once that experiment started, I never went back to defense. I had a good spring, and throughout that summer, I practiced as a running back, and going to the first game, I was listed as the number one running back going into the 95 season.
Okay. So is that your claim to fame that you supplanted Hines Ward as the starting running back?
Yeah, that's my claim to fame. I'm gonna stick to it. I think he kind of wanted to lead the position. I don't think he wanted to take the pounding and everything that goes with playing the position.
Right.
I think he wanted to be a receiver. Howard would do anything for the team, but I think he'd rather play wide receiver than running back.
Sure. Sure. Well, can you walk our listeners through that very special record-breaking day you had against South Carolina and what that was like for you?
That particular day was a blur to me because I really didn't understand what I was doing. I was mm-hmm. still new at the position. I played a little running back in high school, but it was only for short yardage. So it was really my real action at playing running back, at being a starting running back for a football team. First half didn't quite go as planned. Was nothing like spring, and had a terrible first half. Had a couple of fumbles, a couple of tackle for losses. Nothing real positive to write home about. Mm-hmm. But at halftime, I ran to the coaches. And I like, this ain't for me. Move me back to DB, defensive back. I don't think I want to play running back. And nothing was going good for me, and I got a little discouraged, but. It was at that halftime, I had a couple of players come to me and told me to relax and just do like I did in practice. Don't put any pressure on yourself. Just go out there and perform like you did in practice and everything will be fine. Come out the second half, I had 5 touchdowns in the second half. And, after that game, I gained a little confidence and I started playing well.
I guess so. And while you were dominant on offense with those 5 touchdowns in the second half, it was Kirby Smart who dominated on the other side of the ball with 3 sacks. Now, you played alongside Kirby in the 1994 secondary. Can you tell our listeners what he was like as a teammate?
Very smart, a little undersized, mm-hmm. but knew where to be. Always in the right place at the right time. If you look at his his career at Georgia, he seemed to always be around the loose balls, always around tip balls to get the interceptions. He was always in the right place at the right time, and he knew what his job was, and he played it well. It wasn't very fast, wasn't very strong, but knew the game very well and knew how to position himself in a place where he could make plays for the team.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure when you made that switch to running back that you – had some collisions with guys that used to be your fellow secondary mates. What was it like going up against Kirby Smart?
Well, I kind of understood where they were coming from. I think mm-hmm. that's the advantage I had when I moved to running back because I knew what I wanted to do to a running back. I knew what our group wanted to do to running backs. I knew what the defense wanted to do to running backs. And when I got over and started playing the running back position, I vowed to myself I wasn't going to let them do to me what I wanted to do to me.
Right.
So I felt like I had an advantage in that part because I knew how they would attack me. I knew the smaller DBs would go for my legs to try to, because we already always preach that he can't run without his legs. So I kind of knew what they want to do so I could defend myself in that part. And then I knew linebackers, I could probably outrun them. So I kind of took what I learned from defense and applied it to the running back position. And I think that's why I had a little success at the running back position.
Right. And I want to talk a little bit about the adversity that you overcame just in college. Obviously, there was that position switch, but you also overcame a series of injuries before you even got to the NFL. And you overcoming them allowed you to have the opportunity to play with the New England Patriots and to be a first-round pick in 1998. Now, how has that experience opened up opportunities for you to impact the long list of UGA running backs who've gone down with injuries since then?
Ron Corson was there, Mike mm-hmm. Dillon was there, and it seems that every running back that comes through that goes through some type of adversity with injuries, they call me to come down and kind of mentor those guys and talk to them. Mm-hmm. So I had the privilege of going down and just talking to some of those guys and getting them through their injuries and let them know and pretty much telling them my story and what I went through, not only in the severe injury I had with the Patriots, but also the injury history I had when I moved to running back at the University of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And just let them know that, everything would, if you work hard and listen to what the trainers are telling you to do, you should be fine, but you got to put in the work. And if you're expecting a certain result, you got to put in the work to get that result.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm assuming those are guys like Nick Chubb and Todd Gurley. Is that correct, that you've had the opportunity to speak with?
Nick Chubb, Todd Gurley.
Okay.
Keith Marshall.
Yeah.
I think like every year, even Sony, when you heard Hurley's arm, I've talked to just about every running back that's came through. I talked to Zeus. They had me talk to Zeus while he was there this last year because he's coming off a knee injury, you know, once he got there. So
right.
I've had an opportunity to talk to most of the guys since they've arrived at Georgia.
Well, it is cool to kind of hear how running back you is more than just a few players that have been talented, but also guys like you that kind of give back to the guys who are following in your footsteps. And unfortunately, you know, the injuries you suffered in college were really nothing compared to that, for our listeners that don't know, ACL, MCL, PCL, LCL tear that nearly required an amputation during your first ever NFL Pro Bowl weekend. As we all know, you were told you may never be able to walk again, but you ended up running again, and for two touchdowns in your first game back with the Miami Dolphins. Robert, as someone who just constantly overcame adversity throughout your entire football career, how has your success in beating the odds affected your pursuits since retiring as a player?
I just apply it to everyday life, and I use it to mentor the kids that I coach.
Okay.
And let them know that, you know, you can overcome anything you set your mind to. If don't nobody else believe in you, you believe in you. Trust the process, trust everything that you have going for yourself, and never think less of what you can accomplish. And I applied it to my coaching philosophy, just trying to encourage the kids to continue to fight for their dream. And you don't know where you can end up. I mean, if you don't fight, you don't give yourself a chance. So I just want to encourage them to, you know, make the right decision on and off the field and give yourself a chance to live out your dreams.
And as someone who has lived out your dreams and who has overcome more adversity than most athletes face in their entire careers, what advice would you give to this current Georgia team that's facing some adversity of its own right now?
It happens. I mean, that's life. And football is a direct reflection of, you know, life, getting knocked down, getting up, things not quite turning out how you plan. And, I mean, we hit a roadblock last Saturday, but it's nothing that we can't overcome. I mean, it's going to be an uphill battle. It's going to take some self-evaluation, some rededication. But we can win out, can win the SEC. And more than likely, whoever wins the SEC would definitely get a bid. So they just got to do their part. They're not out of the picture, and greater things are upon them. And they just got to continue to fight, continue to work, and not let this one game hold them back from accomplishing the goals that they set for themselves at the beginning of the season.
Absolutely, I agree, Robert. Well, I want to let you go here. I know you got a team to coach over there, but Robert, we really appreciate you taking a moment of your time to join the show, and we wish you and your Riverwood Raiders the best this season.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Robert. I'll be a dog till I die. Till I die, till I die. Okay, so we've scrapped the Savage Pad Savagery segment on this week's show because there's no getting around the fact that Georgia's the most roastable team in college football right now. But I do want to bring Corey Amick on the show for something that still utilizes his unique skill set. Something James Coley refuses to do. But in this segment, Corey and I will discuss Georgia's loss with bits of comedic relief intertwined to make the discussion more bearable, more digestible for both us and our listeners. Corey, how are you holding up over there?
Dag, it's just another week of being a Georgia sports fan, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, in all seriousness, I think having a few days to stew and think about it all, I'm feeling a lot more optimistic than I was right after the game. But,
right.
You know, I'm sure we'll get to that throughout this.
Yeah, it is kind of funny how we are so negative the entire game, and then the whole week after, the hold up week leading up to the next game, we're like, you know, we're not that bad. We're actually, you know, things are looking pretty good. We control our own destiny. And then during the game next week, we'll be texting each other like, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's just kind of – that's the way of Georgia fans. But, Corey, I do want to dive right into what exactly went wrong for the Dogs on Saturday. What, in your opinion, was at the heart of Georgia's problems?
I had two things that really popped to me. First is the noon game, man. I don't think any other fan base in the country fears a noon game as much as we do.
Yes.
I think, you know, we know our players and we know our fan base, and we know that nothing is happening in Athens at noon, and especially good football. And so I think, yes. You know, prime example, Vanderbilt in 2016 when, you know, Jacob Eason was playing, and that whole game was just a slow train wreck of we knew we were going to lose, but I think everybody actually realized it at probably like 2:58 p.m. when we realized that we're down, you know, 17-16 to Vanderbilt and that we weren't going to score.
Right.
And then I think the Tech game, I don't know if it was 2014 or 2015, but when we lost to Tech, I'm pretty sure that was a noon game as well in Athens. So I think every time there's a noon game in Athens, the whole city is just kind of on upset alert. You know, you look at the stadium, I don't even think the Greek section got there until like 3 p.m.
They're the worst. Let's give them a little shout out for being terrible.
Yeah, so I did hear Kirby chirp a little bit in his pregame pregame speech on the sideline to one of the reporters about, you know, the fans showing up and all that. So I don't think that was the right move on his part prior to that game.
No,
but
especially when he didn't show up either.
Yeah, but I mean, to be fair, that's a real thing. And I think this is a taste of Saban's criticism of the Alabama fans when no one wants to go sit in muggy hot Tuscaloosa for 3 hours, you know, on a Saturday when they're going to beat the team they play, which unfortunately didn't go our way this week.
Right.
Number two, which we were texting about this during the game, but a backup quarterback.
Oh.
I mean, even the possibility of a backup coming in the game, like every other fan base is so excited for a starting quarterback to go out because they're just like licking
their
chops.
Out.
Like, oh, this is it. Like, we're about to pound them into the ground. But I think, you know, all of us that really watch Georgia football know that a backup quarterback is our kryptonite. And to be fair, Florida's offense didn't do that much at all other than that one, you know, long play they had in the first quarter. So, like, I'm not going to say that, you know, the backup quarterback came in and just torched our defense like has happened in the past.
You said Florida. You mean South Carolina, right?
Yeah, my bad. Like, when their backup came in, I mean, he didn't have an outstanding game. I think our defense contained him really well for being a dual threat that he was. But I just, you know, those two things combined of a noon game and a backup quarterback coming in.
That's a double whammy.
Yeah, you know, if I'm any other team in the country and I have Georgia on my schedule, I'm seriously considering our game plan being putting in our backup quarterback sometime late second quarter and just seeing what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And when I'm thinking about what went wrong on Saturday, I immediately start thinking about what I could have done differently to help Georgia. You know, as a super fan, you got to be a little superstitious.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking about, like, what did I do wrong? What did I do that was there anything that I could have done differently, or is there anything that I did that may have caused the team to lose? And there was. I had one of those Saturdays where you wake up, watch college football, and immediately start watching your team play at the 11 o'clock Central Time. You're in Central Time now. You know what's up. At that 11 a.m. spot. And I was highly optimistic about a great day coming in college football. What I didn't do, though, in that time frame was put on any kind of Georgia gear of any kind, because I was lazy. And the thing that bothers me the most about it in retrospect is that I did not recognize the problem and make any adjustments at halftime or throughout the game. It's been tearing me up. I'm losing sleep over it. In my defense, by not making a adjustment at halftime or throughout any of the game, that was kind of a tribute to James Coley and Kirby Smart's oversight of him. So I do want to talk a little bit about James Coley. What did you see offensively on Saturday that you feel needs to adjust?
Oh, man, I don't even know where to start. I think it makes sense that we lost this game because it was kind of a when's it going to happen moment since the Vanderbilt game.
Yeah.
I think, like, a lot of people – being the first game of the season, we were all pretty soft on the team and how they looked and how they came out against Vanderbilt. And I think everyone loved the oh, we just kept the playbook nice and small. First game, we want to show too much.
Every year, that's
the scapegoat answer to like, we're going to be better, but it's early on, so who cares? And I think we kind of got away with that in the Vanderbilt game. And then, you know, we play a cupcake team, beat Notre Dame. Offense didn't look great in the Notre Dame game, but everyone forgot that because our defense played so well. And then beat another cupcake team, and it's like, oh, you know, we're fine. Like, we're 4-0. Like, we look whatever. Tennessee game, I think, really started to show Foley's lapse. Like, having that first half against Tennessee and then the second half, like, the go-to answer there is like, oh, well, we just wear teams down at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
So second half, no one can hang with us. And, you know, that didn't happen against South Carolina, who doesn't have that much better of a defense than Tennessee. So there's a lot I think Coley needs to adjust. The way I look at it is like Coley fully embodies that keep chopping mentality that Kirby preaches. So like he's the type of guy that he's staring at like a big sequoia tree out in the redwood forest in California. He's got an axe in his hand and he's just chopping for hours and hours. And there's like an entire shelf of chainsaws right next to him. But he just doesn't use the chainsaws because he's just going to keep chopping. And
right.
So I think
it's like the more frustrated he gets, the more he wants to use what he's using already.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he's keeping that mind. Like, I don't know. I think Kirby does lead into that for us as well. But I think Saturday really illustrated that as much as, you know, we wanted to pin this all on Chaney, that it's a system problem. I think, like, we're very caught up in the identity of being a power run team with this great offensive line. And that we absolutely have to play that way regardless of who's control or who's in control of the game. So I don't know. You know, I think he's got to look at a lot of those things, and I think Kirby kind of has to loosen up his grip. But it'll be interesting to see if anything changes.
Yeah, my fear all along has been that Georgia's offensive problems are rooted in Kirby Smart's offensive philosophy. He handpicked both offensive coordinators, and he seems to dictate the team's philosophy overall. Corey, why do you think exactly Kirby allows or possibly even encourages the kind of play calling that kept the game close enough for South Carolina to have the opportunity to win?
Oh, man, I love Kirby. I do think he's our guy.
Yeah.
Clearly, like, loves the university, loves, like, the way that he gets to interact with the players and coach his alma mater. But I think he's committed to being a defensive team with, like, a very – 2009-esque power offense that, like, when Alabama and LSU were number one and two and they played the
9-6
games.
Yeah.
I think, like, that's, like, Kirby's dream game. But, like, that's just not college football anymore as much as he might want it to be.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think he's still early on in his tenure where he feels like he needs to have control over all sides of the ball, which I'm for a head coach, like, owning that role and saying this is going to be my team as he establishes himself. But, you know, I think he has to take this path that a lot of the other defensive-minded head coaches are, and that's, you know, letting their offensive coordinators, you know, the right guy, obviously, do what they're best at. And I think LSU is, like, the best example of – LSU's had the same offensive coordinator for 5 or 6 years now, and so, like, they trust, their guy's process. But Coach O also trusts the offensive coordinator – to totally reshape their offense and, like, look at how it's played out this year. And I think Coach O is a really good example of being hands off on a part of the game that he's not necessarily the best at coaching.
Right.
And so I don't know if that's just something that Kirby has to realize or doesn't want to realize yet or what's going on. But I do think that is kind of what Kirby needs to do and encourage is to be more hands off in that way. And I mean, I would love to see a Kirby defense that has, like, his entire attention just coaching them. I think
yes.
that would be, like, beautiful to watch as good as our defense already is. So,
yes, it's like he was arguably the best defensive coordinator in the country, and we've got him on our sideline. It would be great to see him kind of own the defense and it really be his defense, because it almost feels like he's given more power to the defensive coordinators that he's had than he has to the offensive coordinators. And offensively, man, we've got so much talent. It's one of those things where it feels like 5 years from now, we're going to be watching these guys in the NFL and being like, oh, my gosh, we had all of them on the same team and we lost to South Carolina.
Yeah.
But we still have the chance to right the ship. I mean, Georgia's no different than a 2016 Clemson team that lost to Pitt at home, or 2015 Alabama that lost to Ole Miss at home, 2014 Ohio State lost to Virginia Tech at home. I mean, the list goes on and on. Corey, with Georgia still controlling its own destiny, in all likelihood, that is, if you know, the SEC champion is to go into the college football playoff, what do you think the Dogs can do to emulate the bounce backs executed by each of these former champions?
Man, they got to dig deep. I think it's easy to blame the coaches and the scheme after a game like that. But, I mean, we did still fail to execute a ton in this game. Defensively, I think they really just have to stay healthy. I think getting Tyson Campbell back and keeping our defensive line healthy, I think our defense is going to be fine against anybody we play this year.
Yep.
So I'm prepared for, like, a low-scoring, you know, 24-17 or lower game against, like, a Florida or an Auburn, because that means our defense is doing their job really well.
Right.
Offensively, our receivers have to start stepping up. I think regardless of the talent level and how much experience they have, I think they can play a lot better. And I don't foresee Jake Fromm having a game like this past game again this season. I think he's going to clean that up. And I think it's really going to – or what's going to determine the success of our offense is the ability of his receivers to create space and get open, and, you know, for our offensive coordinator to design plays that help them, you know, cover that gap if they can't do that themselves. I think that makes a huge difference. And then I think we have to get the ball outside. You know, everyone is so high on DeAndre Swift this year, and Harrion's off to a great start as well. And so we have all this talent in the backfield, but we're just not putting it to use the right way.
Exactly.
So whether they're convinced that Swift can be just as good as Chubb or Gurley, you know, inside the tackles, or I don't know what they see, but it's like every time he's in space, like, he's going to make someone miss. And so exactly. I think we just have to start running the ball outside. And then that opens up the defense, and that allows the pass game to pick up. And that also just makes it a lot easier job for our offensive line to block, you know, six guys rather than eight or nine.
Yep.
So I think it's a lot of, like, easy fixes. It's just a matter of how quickly we do them, and then obviously the resiliency of our team to bounce back and make some changes. So I'm feeling optimistic, but it's definitely going to be a test.
Yes, I agree. I think, like you said, there's two things that Georgia has to change. First off is offensively, we have to adjust. I mean, even if we're in a game and running between the guards, which is essentially what we've done pretty much every game, if it's not working, and it's not going to against really elite defensive lines, we've got to go to the drawing board and figure something else out. And I personally think we should go into games spreading it out a little bit more, and because it does open up runs, and we haven't seen those long runs from Swift this year like we have in previous years. And
yeah.
It hot take here, I don't think our offensive line deserves the amount of heat that they've taken. Because I think they're put in a position to fail where, yes, you got five potential NFL guys going up against nine guys in a box, and they're losing, and it looks like it's their fault. To me, that's a coaching issue. I don't think our coaches are doing a good job of putting the offensive line and the running backs in a position to succeed. And the other part of overcoming the position Georgia's in right now is just going to be mental toughness and leadership. They're facing a lot of negativity from the outside right now with the media. I'm sure it's frustrating to be a player and feel like you can contribute more and that your coach isn't putting you in a good situation. But those guys have got to be resilient, and they've got to show some mental toughness. And someone's got to step up and lead those who maybe aren't mature enough to have that kind of resiliency, because this Georgia team is in a position where they still have national championship hopes within their reach, and yet it feels like they could just as easily lose three or four games and derail our recruiting and the whole future under Kirby Smart. So they're in a really pivotal situation right now, and it is going to take some resiliency and some leadership. But, Corey, we do hope to see them, kind of live up to your optimistic and hopeful expectations. And as always, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Hopefully next week we'll get back to roasting Georgia rivals because the Dogs will play well. But thanks again for joining.
Yeah, looking forward to it. See you, Doug.
Okay, Caleb Gwynn now joins the show for a look ahead to another important week in college football. But before we get into all that, I need to check in on my brother. Caleb, how are you doing over there?
Well, honestly, I'm just trying to cope with my feelings, and I had to kind of pull out a little bit. I couldn't get into too much social media, too much, you know, watching interviews and stuff like that.
Right,
so,
sure.
I'm kind of out of the loop just because I have to care for myself, and I can't let myself, you know, just emotionally crash. But, I'm still trying to be positive, and I think there's, you know, still a lot of positives, but, overall emotionally, pretty exhausted.
Yes. I know the last time we lost to South Carolina, I was watching with you, and after the loss, you spent about an hour in the driver's seat of your car, just sitting in there with your head on the steering wheel. How have you coped with the loss this time? As far as, was there any kind of actions you took after the game to sort of isolate yourself and deal with those feelings?
I found myself in the exact same spot as that year.
Is that like a tradition?
I guess I should turn it into a tradition because it's what I tend to do. So
okay.
Yeah, I guess every time we lose, I'm going to, you know, find myself in the seat of my car with my forehead on my steering wheel because
yeah.
Somehow it gives me some sort of comfort to be isolated from everybody else and all the talking and stuff like that. So it seems to be a tradition.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that's not something you'll have to do for the rest of the year. But Caleb, I am here for you. And, you know, as a real one, you know, you got to check in on your real ones. And I appreciate you. You checked in on me on I guess Sunday it was, and wanted to check back in, make sure you're doing okay. But I am curious, since I know you're in a pretty stable mental state, do you feel like there's anything that you did that may have brought this upon us?
I go back and look at my schedule throughout the week before the game, and I try to analyze what exactly that I might have done, because everything matters, you know. I can't, you know, everything I do has something to do with Georgia football.
Right.
So,
obviously.
Yeah. So I'm still in the process of finding out what it is that I did so I can change it so we can continue on with the winning season. But I will get back with you when I find that out. I've been researching and kind of analyzing my schedule. So.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I talked with Corey earlier over something I did. I didn't wear any Georgia clothing during the game, and I'm kicking myself for it because I should have made the adjustment at halftime. But I know a lot of our fellow dog fans are wondering if this one's on them. And I've recently learned that we have quite a few superstitious folks in our following. Did you see those tweets that I was getting the other day?
Yeah, those were great.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know what I'm referencing, about a week ago, I tweeted out asking our listeners, what's the most superstitious thing they've done on a game day? And the responses did not disappoint. I got a couple of them here. Let's see. First one I'll read. This is Twitter handle Molly. Molly Squires Art, all lowercase. She said, I wear the opposing team's colors on the travel day before every game I attend. I did it by accident one year and realized I had on orange when we got to Jacksonville. Everyone thought I was a Gator, which was annoying, but we won. Never lost a game I intended when I did this. That's Molly's tweet there. Yeah. Caleb, your thoughts?
I don't know if I could do that. I mean, that's definitely taking one for the team because, I mean, everybody else is seeing you and they have a completely different picture of, you know, your fandom. So that, I mean, that's on another level.
Right. And the other thing there is you're wearing orange, which doesn't look good on anybody in any situation. So with that said, Molly, please do attend this year's Georgia Florida game and wear orange on your way to the game. Our entire fan base is literally counting on you. But I'm glad it's you and not me, 'cause I couldn't do it. But it's your, you know, it's your burden to carry. You're like Frodo. You've got to carry the ring. And the ring is the orange shirt that you will be wearing on your way to Jacksonville. But, Caleb, do you have any tweets that you particularly liked out of those?
Oh, yeah. There was this, I think it was at Anthony D. Davis 10.
Yeah, I got that one.
He said something about the, there was the pizza guy. I'm definitely paraphrasing on this, but there's the pizza guy that after Georgia started 2011 0-2 start, he bought the same pizza from the same place and had a blue Powerade every game. And we ended up winning the rest of the games of that season. So
that one's pretty good. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that wins championships. That kind of dedication from fans. And I believe the second loss in 2011 was to South Carolina, if I'm not mistaken. And so, you know, maybe after this loss to South Carolina, Anthony Davis, Unibrow Anthony Davis, maybe it's him. Maybe he's one of our listeners. But, you know, he needs to bring back that same pizza from that same place, which I hope is still in business, and drink a blue Powerade from here on out. Last one of these tweets I want to give a little shout out to Hope, the Twitter handle Skelton Hope. She said, this one's good. She said, I got a pedicure at the beginning of the 2017 season, which was the Rose Bowl year. She said, they kept winning, so I wouldn't remove the polish. I was convinced that small chip of red paint was going to win UGA a national championship. Couldn't find glitter. Couldn't find glitter red at the start of last season, but I found it this year. Yeah, Hope, if you're listening, please use whatever polish you used in 2017, because we will take another shot at the national title.
I love that. We're going to need an extra layer of that this year, I think.
Yeah, especially now. But things are still, you know, in play. And speaking of still in play, both of us are still in play in the pick six, in which we pick six games each week. We're actually tied up after last week's games. So Caleb and I both have 18 points. That's both 15 games we predicted correctly and 3 points from the extra points, which is the Georgia scores. As some of you may remember, I picked Georgia winning by one less point than Caleb last week. And since Georgia lost, technically I was closer to the score. So I got the extra point, and we're tied up at 18. Pick six for this week. We're going to start with an SEC East showdown. Number 9, Florida, coming off that loss to LSU, but a respectable loss. And they're playing on the road at South Carolina, who we're not going to even mention from here on out. I think we should bleep them out the rest of this segment, at least, maybe the rest of the season. So I'm going to use a bleeper in post. But okay, Florida at South Carolina, who's your pick?
I got Florida. I was really impressed with Florida against LSU. Found a little bit of respect for the team, not for Florida,
right?
The University of Florida, but you know how they played was pretty good. And I think South is not going to come out with this one. I think Florida wins this.
Yeah, I'm going Florida as well. Now, if had lost to Georgia, I would actually be thinking upset alert here because they're playing at home and it's a noon game, and Florida's still feels like they're overrated, even though like now it's like, who are they going to lose to? Hopefully us. But yeah, I got to go with Florida. I just don't see someone pulling that kind of upset 2 weeks in a row, but would not be mad if it happened. Next one, number 12, Oregon at 25, Washington. Caleb, I know this one's tough for you because you picked Oregon to make the playoff, but you love Jacob Eason. Who are you picking in this one?
Oh man. This is like, Herbert is like Jacob Eason 2.0 to me.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's going to be like that Spider-Man meme where like Spider-Man's pointing at Spider-Man. That's going to be
exactly
Jacob Eason and Herbert.
Well, I'm going to go with the team I'm cheering for, which is Jacob Eason. So whoa. I'm going to go with Washington.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they're fairly even, and so I'm just going to give the edge to Washington.
Okay, I hate to do this. I hope I'm wrong, honestly. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm going with the Oregon Ducks just because I've been more impressed with them as an overall team than I have been with Washington when I've watched each of these teams this year. Next pick is number 16, Michigan, at number 7, Penn State, who has remained undefeated. Caleb, who you got?
Yeah, I like Penn State in this. Even still, Michigan's overrated to me, and Penn State looks to be pretty good. I mean, undefeated, obviously, but they'll get some tests down the road, but I think they're a legit team.
Yes. I think while we're on the subject of overrated, I think they should have an overrated bowl every year. And just like have like fans vote on the two most overrated teams that aren't in the playoff. And I think this year it would certainly be Florida, Michigan, rematch from a bowl game a couple years ago or whenever that was, maybe last year. I don't know. But I'm going with Penn State in this one as well, though. I think Michigan's a team that I'll probably pick against in every game against a ranked team, just by principle and also by having seen them play. Quick picks. We'll, these last three, we'll just hit them hard, hit them quick. Number 17, Arizona State at number 13, Utah. I'm going with the Utes because they beat Alabama like 10 years ago. Caleb, who do you have?
I like the Utes too.
Okay. Next one, SEC East game. Number 22, Missouri at Vanderbilt. My pick's Mizzou.
Yeah, I think Mizzou's pretty legit. I like Mizzou over Vandy.
Okay. And next one, 18 Baylor at Oklahoma State. Yeah. I'm going to go Baylor for the cousins. Aunt Melanie, if you're listening, that one's for you. Go Bears.
Yeah, I'll stay in the family. Go Baylor.
Welcome to the family. And the extra point, Kentucky at number 10, Georgia. Kentucky's a team that lost to Florida by 8, which turns out to not be bad. And then they went on to lose to Mississippi State by 15 and South Carolina by 17. So a little bipolar. But last week, Kentucky's leading wide receiver, Lynn Bowden Jr., made his first start at quarterback and rushed for 196 yards and 3 touchdowns. Kentucky has everything that it takes to upset Georgia. And by that, I mean a seemingly capable backup quarterback. Caleb, let's do this again where we say them at the same time. Say it at the same time this time, please. We're going to say 1, 2, 3, and then we both say it. Okay, our score predictions. Okay.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 47-14.
48-14.
Oh, my gosh. Same as last week.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you just, like, look at your notes from last week on accident?
No, these are my feelings for this week.
Okay. Yeah, I just decided we're going to correct from last week, and we're going to get what we should have gotten last week, which was 47-14. So we literally both made the same prediction as last week. But, yeah, Caleb, thoughts on this one coming up?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping and thinking that Georgia will be a little angry, hopefully.
Please, yes.
And maybe light a little fire into the coaching staff and kind of have some aggression. I feel like we weren't very aggressive last week.
Yes.
There's a lot of things that I felt like we were just playing it safe. We're really just trying to get to the SEC championship and do it over again, but we have to win these games first. Yep. And I feel like we have to be aggressive for that. So I'm looking for some aggression offensively and defensively.
Yeah, I think on defense, we'll learn how good our rushing defense really is, because Kentucky's, at least if they're playing Lynn Bowden Jr. at quarterback, they were running the ball often last week, because, I mean, he's not a passing quarterback. And I think Georgia did a pretty good job, you know, against Ian Book, as far as his running ability, and as well as the backup against South Carolina. It's not like he tore us up. I mean, our team should have won that game, like, 47-10 or 17 or whatever their final score was, but it was just offensive problems make the defense mm-hmm. look bad. So I'm with you. I want to see the offense spread the ball out. I want to see them be vertical. We've got a guy like D-Rob that can straight up create separation purely with vertical speed, and it blows my mind that with an upperclassman quarterback who's got a decent arm, we're not taking shots down the field more. Here's what else I want to see. I want to see George Pickens and Dominique Blaylock used more. Georgia's got to learn that we've got to have our best athletes and our best players on the field and our playmakers on the field. Big-time players make big-time plays, and I think those guys are the big-time players that we're going to need to make big-time plays later in the season. Come Florida and come Auburn, and then, Lord willing, come Alabama or LSU. But it feels like we're playing 10-on-11 sometimes, or 9-on-11, and I think we're not utilizing all of our talent as best we can. Would like to see some runs on the outside, and the last thing that I want to see from Georgia and Jake Fromm in particular in this game is I want to see Jake Fromm look at the middle of the field, because I don't know if you saw this, Caleb. That last pass to D-Rob, that was a little bit too far away from him. That would have been a touchdown to win the game in overtime.
Yeah.
DeAndre Swift was wide open over the middle of the field. And if you go back and watch Fromm, it seems like he snaps the ball and he just looks to the sideline pretty often. And he needs to use the whole field, because we get picked on over the middle sometimes, and then we don't take advantage of that on the other side of the ball, simply because I don't know if it's because our linemen are taller than Fromm and it's harder for him to see, or if he's just more comfortable throwing to the sidelines, or if he knows that it's safer to throw to the sidelines. You're less likely to be picked off. But he also did throw an interception that cost us the game. He's got to do a better job of using the whole field, and would love to see that improvement on Saturday as well.
Yeah, I love that. I agree. I think there's so many opportunities for George Pickens, like just seeing him dive for that ball.
You just
got to get it in his vicinity, and he'll give you the best shot to get come down with it. So I agree. Like Blaylock and Pickens, I mean, if we want to contend and start to get a streak going, I think we need to start seeing those guys thrown to more often.
Yeah, I think those guys with D-Rob and Cager gives us our best shot in the passing game, as far as separation and catching ability, blocking taken into account, because I do know Tyler Simmons is a phenomenal blocker, and would love to see whoever's on the field step up and make some plays, but I have my opinions about the players who best position us to be winning these big games, and I hope to see some adjustments this week overall.
Yeah, I'm really excited for a lot of things. I think our offensive line needs to prove a point that, we are, as big as we are, we should be pushing them around. So running game too, not just the passing game. I think we just have a lot to prove, and I think that the coaching staff is about to really lay into some things that we need to work on. So I think we'll see, a lot of scoring for Georgia in this game.
Yeah. I feel like that South Carolina game has the potential to be a blessing in disguise. And
yeah,
not trying to be all sunshine and rainbows here, but I think that the way Georgia's played in recent weeks, including Tennessee, including Notre Dame, including Vanderbilt, I mean, leading up to this point in the season, we have not played the kind of football that is going to win us games against this year's Florida team, certainly Alabama or LSU, and maybe even Auburn. And while losing to South Carolina is no fun, if that's what it takes for us to wake up and start playing the kind of football that can get us to our ultimate goals, and we still have all those goals in front of us, I would much rather have lost that game and come to that conclusion than have made it to the Florida game and had the wake-up call then, and after that game it would be too late. So this is our last shot, but you don't often get second chances in life, and this is absolutely a second chance for this Georgia team. They've got to take advantage of it.
Very well said. I believe it to be true.
Well, hopefully we'll see it. But as always, for those of you listening, we appreciate you, and got a lot of love for those of you who share the show with the dog fans. To those who will be in Athens this week, drive safe, be loud, take it in, and do the things that you have to do to help the team win. You know what I'm talking about, superstitious people. And until next time, go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.